The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Finally, Carson Wentz gets benched. Ever hear the expression, a day late and a dollar short? I told you 4 weeks ago they got to bench Carson Wentz to hold him accountable. He's beyond fixing now. It doesn't matter anymore. You must bench Carson Wentz. Yes, it's true. But not to fix him. And not to save your season. And not because Jalen Hurts gives you a better chance to win, though he might. You have to bench Carson Wentz for one reason and one reason only. You have to bench Carson Wentz because you got to find out if Jalen Hurts can be your quarterback. You spent a second-round pick on him. Can he be your quarterback? The Eagles are going to pick, what, fifth or sixth in the draft? You got to find out if you have to draft a quarterback. Think about this. They have a 20-at-the-time, 5-year-old quarterback who was the best quarterback in the NFL through week, like, 13, something like that. He gets hurt. Their backup, who'd been excellent in Arizona, who'd been, you know, in college, who was 27 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, 8-2 as an Eagles quarterback in Nick Foles, comes back to Philadelphia after time in the wilderness under Jeff Fisher, looking like he couldn't play anymore, right? Takes over from Carson Wentz. I was like, okay, the Eagles are dead in the water now. They can't win a Super Bowl with Nick Foles. Oh, yes, they did. And Nick Foles was great throughout the playoffs. Next season, they're under 500. 5-6, I think. Nick Foles takes over. They catch fire. They make the playoffs. They beat the Bears at Soldier Field. They almost beat the Saints at New Orleans in the playoffs. Wentz hasn't done anything since then. They gave him a $100 million plus contract. The power went to his head. He messed up game after game, talking about that's just the way we do things around here. Coach didn't know what to do with him. He obviously wasn't taking coaching. Point of emphasis had to be ball security and don't force things and don't try to be the hero. It didn't matter. Reports come out. You know, team is shook. Wentz has too much power. Peterson can't do anything. Couldn't choose his own staff, right? Quarterback got a line to the owner. GM sees what's going on with Wentz. He's regressing. Drafts a quarterback in the second round. You go from franchise 25-year-old MVP caliber starting quarterback with a backup who won who was Super Bowl MVP to the backup's gone. The starter's regressing. You had to draft a quarterback in the second round when that starter was 27 with a $60 million dead cap hit if you try to cut him. And even that's no good. You got to find out about your backup quarterback, your second round backup, right now to see if you don't have to draft a quarterback again. It's a mess in Philly. It's a mess in Philly. Are the Seahawks in trouble? How is it in Seattle? There's one thing to lose shootouts to the Arizona Cardinals or the Buffalo Bills, or in a tough game against the Los Angeles Rams, who can play on both sides of the ball. But losing to the Giants at home was not supposed to happen. Faced a Giants defense that ranked 28th in DVOA after week 11, and 21st after shutting down Brandon Allen and the Bengals the following week. Sunday was supposed to be a get-right game for the Seattle offense, right? 10 points on 12 possessions. They had 5 at the half. I mean, it was bad, but you got to give the Giants credit. As much as the story is Seattle's regression, Joe Judge has the Giants pointed in the right direction. You got to be honest. Look at the teams that are struggling right now in the NFC least, and look at the teams on the rise. The teams with the right culture at the top. Ron Rivera. Ron Rivera is not the best coach in the league, but he is a competent NFL coach. Riverboat Ron. He'll take gambles, but he sets the right kind of culture, professional culture. Joe Judge wasn't even a coordinator. Gets to be head coach of a glamour franchise, one of the original franchises, right? And he starts off like coaches are having to run laps, and it's like, what is he doing? It's one thing to be a hard-nosed guy when you come in with very little on your resume or credibility in the locker room that makes the players think, what does this guy come off having us do all these kind of like hard-nosed, he's being like a real tough guy with the players and the coaches, and he's never even been a coordinator. How do you get that situation, how do you get a locker room to buy in? Because Joe Judge has done it. And I think the answer is the coaches and players see you put in the work and you try to put them in positions to be successful. The coaches and players on the Giants, remember, he also got rid of his defensive coordinator. There was a little headbutting. He's like, okay, get out. I'm the boss. But he does it in a way where it's not just when everyone's scared, they get in line. Because everyone can get in line and still not play well. No, Joe Judge got the franchise to buy in, just like he got the owners to buy in when he met them. Joe Judge is getting the job? Right? Like Mike Tomlin's getting the job? Yep, they like the cut of his jib. And so does the locker room, I think. Seems that way to me. Because these dudes are playing. Won 4 straight, winning up front, winning the battle at the line of scrimmage, both sides of the ball, but particularly on defense. And now all of a sudden, Bill Belichick, whose tree was, barren, like it did not result, it did not bear fruit. All of a sudden, he's got Joe Judge looking good, Brian Flores looking good. By the way, mess with Brian Flores' players. See what happens. Brian Flores get out. The coach is trying to come out on the field and fight. You got to love that. Vrabel looking good. All of a sudden, things are changing a little bit, aren't they? Anyway, it's not good for the Seahawks, who my preseason pick was the Saints. I switched to the Seahawks when Seattle picked up Jamal Adams. And then when New Orleans got Quan Alexander at the deadline, I said, okay, fine, I'm back on the Saints. But it's not looking good for Seattle right now. They don't look like the best team even in their own division. It is the best division in football, NFC West. But they don't look like the best team in it. Coach Pete Carroll, what's going on with the offense?
We had trouble all day long, and give them credit. They've been playing really good ball, but I need to look at the film and see what the heck happened, why it was like that. Games are hard, games are tough, and we can't let this thing knock us off. I'm getting going and moving forward, and it's really important we get right back to business again, and it's the only choice we have, really, so that's what we'll do.
I mean, I spent all last week talking about how Philadelphia played their guts out on defense against Seattle, and for the coach to on a 4th and 14 4th and 4 from Seattle 15, he goes for it instead of taking the points down. By the way, down 11. You're going to have to score twice anyway, or 3 times, depending on how you look at it. But maybe Philadelphia's defense didn't play quite as well as I thought they did. Because the very next week, here are the Giants throttling the Seahawks offense. Maybe it's a Seattle issue. Warren Sharp joins me on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. NFL analytics and visualized data at sharpfootballanalysis.com. Warren, thank you for joining me as always. I wanted you on the show today especially because you've been tweeting about some subjects that I think, oh, Warren Sharp right on the money again, as usual. I want to start with the firing of Greg Williams. Warren, I never quite understood or I never agreed with Bounty Gate. In the sense that as long as you're not breaking the rules, you're allowed to break bones. That's the truth of a brutal sport like contact football, like tackle football. But I'm not talking about Bounty Gate right now. I'm talking about Greg Williams coaching. That was the dumbest decision of the year, in my opinion. What do you think of Greg Williams being fired?
I think it's completely justified. It should have happened a while ago. He is struggling as a coach just with his X and an O's and putting the guys in the right position. He, in my opinion, as an analyst, is not deserving of that job. His defenses have not been good for a while now, but as an individual and as a person in this industry, I do not have any more disdain for anyone besides Greg Williams. I think he's classless. I think he's arrogant. He's prideful. He calls his defenses along those same lines. He talks to people in that same manner. He's been on nothing but teams with terrible defensive output. I mean, if you look at since he was banned for Bountygate and when he's brought back into the NFL on two different seasons, his teams have not had a single win. He's never been the defensive coordinator for a team that has actually posted a winning record in any of these seasons. We're talking about 7-9 at best. And it's just, he's just purely arrogant. And I don't like it. If you look at Bountygate, you said, yeah, you can play physical, you can play tough. And that's what he tries to teach his guys. But look at what he's done this season just on roughing the passer penalties. There's not a single team that, whose defense has recorded more than five roughing the passer penalties all season long, except for Greg Williams. And his defense does not have six. They don't have seven. They don't have eight. They don't have nine. They don't have 10. They have 11 roughing the passer penalties. You cannot tell me that this is because this – more than double anybody else. It's just a joke. I'm glad he's gone. And quite frankly, I hope that no other coach is desperate enough to bring him back on as a defensive coordinator.
Well, to me, that's the dumbest play of the year. And I'm glad. This is why I wanted you on. I know you have strong feelings about it. And your feelings are backed up with actual information and analysis. You know, when the Falcons didn't jump on that onside kick and like all, it was like contagious stupidity, all five guys, they killed their team's chances to win. But that's manslaughter. That's not premeditated. What was bizarre about Greg Williams' call is that was first degree murder of a team's chance to win a single game. Like all you have to do in that situation, Warren, talking to Warren Sharp, Sharp Analytics, Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio, all you have to do. It's not let the defense get behind. Just don't give up a touchdown. Give up a completion. It doesn't matter. Just not a touchdown. And he sends seven? What is that about?
No, and I'm disappointed, but it wasn't a surprise, right? Because Derek Carr said we weren't surprised. We anticipated this because this is just the way that this guy calls plays. But what is Adam Gase doing? At the same time, like, yes, it's all on Greg Williams. But as Adam Gase, you are the coach of this football team, you have the ability. He has one timeout in his pocket. Apparently, the story goes that he heard as he's talking to another coordinator on the headset, so not a defensive coordinator, not the guy who's calling in the single most important play of the rest of the game, the coverage for what you're going to play on this critical pass down with 13 seconds left in the game.
He's talking,
Adam Gase is talking to somebody else entirely and overhears cover zero and asked, wait a second, is Greg Williams just calling cover zero? The assistant, whoever he was talking to, had to say, yes, he just called cover zero. And by the time Gase looked at the football field, the snap was about to take place. He otherwise could have called timeout if he had just been paying attention to what he was doing. And he has now since gone on record as saying, because he's had the press conference, I wish I did. Well, then why aren't you paying attention? Why are you talking to somebody else during the course of that play?
Warren, I'm so glad you brought this up. What could he possibly be talking about that's more important than that at that moment? Let me tell you a story. My 95-year-old grandfather, my Zeta, means grandfather in Yiddish, was diagnosed with non-small cell lung cancer in 97. He passed away from it. And we were very close, you know, grew up in the house with him. And he had to go into the hospital to get checked out, and he was missing a Yankees game he really wanted to see. He tried to get me into soccer. I wound up getting him into the Yankees instead when I was a kid. And he started talking loud because he thought he was being slick and that the nurses would overhear him. And he was saying, oh, if only they knew, it was like 9 o'clock at night, if only they knew I had this important appointment. He thought he was going to trick them, like pressure them into letting him out of the hospital quickly. And I was thinking to myself, hey, you're 95 years old. You're dying of lung cancer. It's 9 o'clock on a Thursday night. What could be more important than this right now? You're not going to fool anyone into the, you know, like, and that, it's kind of like that with Adam Gase. Adam Gase, there's one play. You're about to win your first game of the season. All you have to do is concentrate on this. Who are you talking to? If not your defensive coordinator, by the way. It's unbelievable.
Absolutely ridiculous. The game plan for that game, I was surprised they even led. They just got over because they were able to run the football with some backup running backs after Frank Gore got a concussion. But I think this, the whole coaching staff, it takes a lot to get a team to not win a single game in the NFL. Some of it is, just like you said, this premeditated murder on the defensive side of the football on that play call. But also, it's the offensive coach, it's the play calling, it's everything, and it's under his watch. And frankly, I think the only thing that you're doing here is allowing yourself to get this first overall pick by having Adam Gase in charge. But he's certainly not helping the locker room whatsoever win any of these games. It's just a problem.
Speaking of awful coaching, you identified this, and I'm so glad you did. You know, after Tomlin went 8-8 last year, it's like, oh my God, he's coach of the year. He didn't have his quarterback. He didn't have his second-string quarterback. All this, he still went 8-8. Belichick right now is 6-6. Not only did he not have any offensive talent last year, he has less this year. Hightower on the defense, Chung and Hightower didn't even sign up for the season. He lost Gilmore for a while, right? He has a new quarterback coming off a catastrophic injury who's just the opposite of his old quarterback. Everything's set up for, like anyone else, this is like a winless season. He's 6-6. He's two plays away, a goal line stand that Bobby Wagner made a play on Cam, and then the Bills stripped Cam by the goal line. He's two plays away from being 8-4 right now, and he went up against Anthony Lynn, who and you identified this as a coaching mismatch. By the way, the Patriots won 45-0 with an inferior roster. Right, switch the rosters, maybe it's 90-0. Warren, what did you see heading into this game?
Well, I saw a coach that was ill-prepared to figure out a path to victory. He makes mistakes with the clock. He makes mistakes in clutch situations, but he does not understand the basic ways to strategize to optimally win a ball game. And I was very concerned with the way that this team has relied upon Austin Ekeler since he returned from this injury. I mean, they gave him 30 plays in their last game against the Buffalo Bills. They were trailing 24-6, I believe, during the course of that game, got back in with some late points late, but it was because of their over-reliance on Austin Ekeler. Almost 50% of the plays in the second half of that game went to him. I realized right away that he's going to have a terrible game plan here. This Chargers team goes 50% run in the first quarter on early downs, gets nothing. And Belichick, what has Belichick been studying? He studied what his prior coach on the defense side of the football down in Miami was doing against this very same Chargers team to completely frustrate them. And he implemented a lot of those same strategies. And what the Chargers didn't do is they didn't learn from their mistakes in that game. They decide they're trailing 14-0 in the second quarter. So they go pass heavy, but they're throwing the ball just to Austin Ekeler. Once again, five passes to Austin Ekeler, only two completions. The worst play on third down, Max, is a pass to a running back. The chance of converting a pass to a running back on third down is significantly lower than a pass to a wide receiver or a pass to a tight end. Down 14-0 in that second quarter, the only two plays that the Chargers call on third downs are both passes to running backs. They pump the ball, not surprisingly, the very next play after each one of those passes because they don't convert. By the time you get to halftime, you're down 28-0 and the game is over. So if you're analyzing this game or thinking about this game, don't even worry about the second half. It's completely irrelevant. This game was totally lost in the first half with the game plan that the Chargers entered with, and it was predictable that they were going to have a terrible strategy, and it was predictable that Bill Belichick was going to have a great strategy, and both those things overlapped and lined up perfectly here.
Yeah, well, it seems that Anthony Lynn has to go. Okay, Warren, they want me to break for commercial, but while I have you here, I have two quick questions I want, as quick as you can, answers, okay? Because I need to know from the answer man right now. Number one, Joe Judge and the job he's done with the Giants. Go ahead.
Extremely impressive. Extremely impressive. I definitely did not expect them to be sitting in this position. Not that they haven't won many games. I mean, they still have a losing record, but to be in this position, to be winning games on the road with Colt McCoy.
No, Warren's dropped out a little bit. Warren, you there?
I'm here, yes.
Okay, great. So here's the other one. While I have you, before you drop out and before Raj makes me move on, can Taysom Hill be the Saints quarterback after this season? Assuming Drew Brees comes back, I think they can make a good run in the playoffs. Can Taysom Hill actually be a quarterback in the NFL?
He could be a quarterback that will never reach the ceiling that the rest of the roster is capable of delivering. I mean, he could, with Sean Payton's genius, you could find a way to utilize Taysom Hill and produce a average season in the NFL, but it's not going to deliver on what Sean Payton wants to, which is to win a Super Bowl.
The great Warren Sharp, ladies and gentlemen, NFL analytics and visualized data. Some smart team eventually will pay this guy enough money to make his proprietary stuff their proprietary stuff. I need to see what website I'm plugging, Raj. You just got to go down a bit. SharpFootballAnalysis.com. That's SharpFootballAnalysis.com. Warren, thanks a million for your time. As always, ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, homes, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and Progressive.com. We've got two games on Monday Night Football. Steelers better not overlook Washington.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Monday Night Football doubleheader, Washington Steelers, Bills, Niners. You know, that Niners defense can still sneak up on some teams. You know, like the Rams and the Bills have certain things in common. And the Niners stunned the Rams. That's not unthinkable. Bills got to travel to the Niners. They could lose that game. The Bills, there's something about that team that every time I'm ready to say, okay, they're that kind of upper echelon team, they have a performance that has me thinking, not quite yet. And Josh Allen's funny because what tier of quarterback does he fall into right now? Right early on, it's like, ooh, this dude who was trending in the right direction last season, let's be honest, even last year was like, oh, okay, Josh Allen, okay. But this year, I started out the season saying, like, why does everyone love Buffalo? Everything Josh Allen can do, Cam Newton can do better. Not true. Bills could, like, this is the kind of game the Bills have to win if they want to be the type of team, like, get to where they're trying to go, you know? They need to beat teams like the Niners, the kind of team that's capable of upsetting a Rams team. Bills got to start taking care of business. Washington, Pittsburgh, I told you, that's a dangerous game. The reason I like Pittsburgh is not because, you know, Pittsburgh is undefeated and Washington's not that good, because Washington, like the Giants, has been trending in the right direction. When you look at the NFC East, the Cowboys and Eagles were favored, but it's the Giants and Washington who've been playing the best football. And when you look at their coaches, Joe Judge is a promising young head coach. And Ron Rivera is an established veteran coach, a successful coach. He's been to a Super Bowl. He's in the playoffs. If Ron Rivera is your coach, and remember, NFL, most important guy in the organization is the coach. Number one most important guy. Then the quarterback. Baseball is all about your general manager. Basketball is all about your superstar. Football is all about your head coach. That's the number one indicator, what kind of team you're going to have. Number one correlation. And with the Panthers, you like say they're in the playoffs every other year on average, right? It's pretty good. Rivera, he's capable of having a 6-10, 7-9 kind of season, but more often than not, it'll be above 500, and you'll get to the playoffs. And can you make a run with that guy? Well, yeah, to the Super Bowl. Hasn't won one yet, but he got there. And Washington has a defense. Just the kind of game, right? Pittsburgh's 11-0, they have some... tougher opponents on paper coming up after Washington. They just played Baltimore. Big letdown emotionally after that game. They're on a short week because they had to keep postponing the Baltimore game. So they're on a five-day week instead of seven. Kind of set up as a trap game. Sneeze coming. Well, I don't have a cough button.
Gesundheit.
Thank you. Ooh. I can't hold it anymore. You know, like when you sneeze and you got to hold it in and you're like, your throat comes up like a frog, like a bullfrog. I can't do it. Who could do it?
Nobody.
Anyway, the point is, Washington be a trap game under most circumstances, except that they struggled against the Ravens and Tomlin came out and was very upset. He behaved as though it was a loss. And I think that saves Pittsburgh, but I think it's going to be that kind of game. I think it's the kind of game that Pittsburgh needs saving in. Kieran in South Carolina, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. There you are, Kieran, on the air. I hear a voice in the background, struggling with a K. Yeah. What's up, Kieran?
Hey, Max. So the Tennessee Titans, I know they lost this week against the Cleveland Browns, and I actually think that is going to help them. After losing to the Cleveland Browns, they're going to see that the defense needs to be fixed, and after adjusting a few things, I think that after improving the defense, Derrick Henry has a chance. I mean, if you look at how they played the Steelers earlier in the season, and they only lost by a field goal, I mean, the Steelers are undefeated. I think when that team gets to the playoffs, I think they can do something.
Unfortunately, remember what Casey Joyner, the football scientist, told us last week? The softer divisions don't produce Super Bowl champions. Ain't going to be the Titans or the Colts, in other words. I agree. Like, when you watch the Titans on a good week, and most weeks are pretty good for them, not this past one, but when you watch the Titans on a good week, you go, "Yeah, why couldn't they win the Super Bowl if they got hot at the right time?" I like Tannehill. Everyone likes Derrick Henry. Titans are a good team, but they're not a great team. And so to win a Super Bowl, you're going to have to capture lightning in a bottle if you're the Titans. It's not going to be because you're the best team. The Titans are a B-plus team, just to be honest. News from Max Kellerman Nation. Kieran just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. And you're going to get to hit us up, too.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast. You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because I know on First Take, I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's Last Take.
Floyd Mayweather Jr. sets exhibition bout versus Logan Paul. That's Jake Paul's brother, the retired former champion, 50-0, pound-for-pound champ. Announced on his Instagram account Sunday that he'll fight Logan Paul, a YouTube personality, on February 20th in an exhibition bout that'll be streamed as a pay-per-view. Apparently, they have an interesting idea with pricing. First million buys, $30, and then it goes up to like $60, something like that. Because to sell a million of that, you know, you're going to have to charge $30. Mike Tyson, Roy Jones, 1.4 million buys, or 2 million. It's over a million buys at $50 a pop. Wow. Canelo and Triple G can't do that, but Tyson and Roy sparring an exhibition can do it. Insane. Anyway, you know, there are those who would say that Floyd is, you know, don't like what happened to Nate Robinson coming back for revenge. Let me tell you what Floyd's doing. Floyd figured out a bunch of years ago, that he doesn't have to fight boxers. At first it was like, let me choose the right guy at the right time to maximize reward, minimize risk, right? Because Floyd really flipped the paradigm in boxing. Boxing is networks and fans exploiting fighters. Because ultimately, I don't care how slick a guy boxes, right? You want to see what he's made of. In other words, you want to see him in a brutal fight, in a fight he might lose. You want to see his organs damaged and his face smashed, right? Like, that's, let me be blunt. You want to find out what a guy has internally when another guy has his number. That's an exploitation, brother, of fighters by networks and fans. Floyd and Al Haymon said, his advisor, quote-unquote advisor, runs half of boxing, said, no, we're going to flip the script here. No. The fighters are going to exploit the networks and fans. We're going to take minimal risk, maximum reward fights and try to get out without getting hit. Get hit as little as possible. Get out with our marbles and the money. Our marbles and our marbles, right? Yeah, okay. Good idea. But in certain ways, the fans' and fighters' interests in that sense are diametrically opposed and irreconcilable. Floyd figured out, I don't even have to fight boxers. I could fight Conor McGregor. He could fight a kangaroo if he wanted to. Like, he could fight whatever, not a trained contender or champion. And instead of making $30 million for the fight, he could make $200 million for the fight or $100 million for the fight. That's what the Logan Paul thing. Money Mayweather doesn't get out of bed unless there's money involved. He sees an opportunity to milk a pay-per-view, and I don't know, pocket $50 million probably at least, for boxing a guy who doesn't box. Not really. Donovan in Virginia, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, the Browns and the Raiders will be in the conference championship, and Robert Easton will have two of the three titles in this decade.
Yeah, I can barely hear Donovan. He's very low. But I will say this. Did he say conference championship Browns and Ravens? Not in 2020 or 2021. Eric in Washington, you're on the Max Kellerman Show.
Hey. Hey, thanks for taking my call. The Tyson and Jones Jr. fight was awesome. I thought it was amazing. It brought back memories of watching Tyson when I was a kid. I want to see Tyson and Holyfield, and I think Tyson gets him. Your thoughts?
No, you don't, and no, he won't. Holyfield just wrong for Mike. Holyfield wrong for Iron Mike. I don't care when they fought or how many times they fight. Don't take that fight, Mike.
Yeah, didn't you say something like a story back? I don't know if it was the 84 Olympic team or something where as amateurs they had mixed it up and Holyfield had Tyson's number way back then?
Well, the story goes, according to Emmanuel Stewart in the Olympic Village or in the training for the Olympics, the American team was together shooting pool, and even when Tyson lost, he wouldn't give up the stick, you know, give up the cue stick. You know, this Pernell Whitaker is a lightweight at the time. Melvick Taylor's a little guy. You know, everyone's Breland's 147 pounds. Holyfield was a light heavy. And Holyfield backed him up against the wall and was like, you know, it's his turn. And Mike was like, all right, you got it. And then in the pros, you know, Holyfield's 2-0 against Mike. It's just a bad matchup for Mike. News from Max Kellerman Nation. Eric just hit us
on
the pepper call in line. I have time for any more, Roger. I'd like to get some more. Khalil in New Mexico. You're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, what's up, Max? Longtime fan, also a fellow Giants fan. My thing is this. My housemates and I are praying to the football gods that they make Eric Bieniemy the head coach for the Houston Texans so we can have Deshaun Watson versus Patrick Mahomes. It'll be like Michael Jordan versus Magic Jordan. Michael Jordan versus Magic Johnson for years. What do you think?
Oh, I love that idea. By the way, Deshaun Watson is so good. Deshaun Watson ain't doing it with smoke and mirrors anymore. You know, like, Watson was one of those guys, he could run and he could throw, but it was like a lot of, like, he just felt like a winner type guy, right? And no, Deshaun Watson is great. His passing has gotten better and better. And, you know, other than Mahomes and Rodgers, Watson is as good as anybody. Tyrone in Philadelphia, you're on the Max Philadelphia, you're on the Max Kellerman Show.
Yes, yes. You talk about the defensive woes with Greg Williams. What about the offensive woes with Adam Gase?
We're going to get into that tomorrow, but we're out of time. We spent too long saying yes, yes. Got two games on Monday Night Football. Max Kellerman Show. See you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Max Kellerman Show. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.